Doesn't that computer know who you
are? Don't they have any idea?
Bow down to the Tech Talk host.
That's right.
Behold the glory that is here.
A little while ago, I was installing some software, and I ran across this exact same
thing. I find you pompous, judgmental, and completely self-absorbed. Would you be my
friend? A Windows Vista machine.
You would think.
You'd think there'd be no problem.
How could there be a problem with that?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Directory permissions with config.msi directory, blah, 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 blah.
This is Tech Talk.
Good morning. This is Tech Talk on WRLR 98.3 LPFM around Lake Heights in Illinois. Man, it's going to be a fantastic day. Great show. Already we've got one guest on the mic here. Who do we got? Dave, are you with us?
Good morning, everybody.
Oh my gosh.
Sparky Saganaki.
Oh my gosh. It all worked. That's what I can't believe. We've got technology and cylinders are firing, or whatever it is that they put inside of those boxes, and Dave's on air with us. So welcome back.
Darn, it's amazing. We actually completed a phone call. Yeah.
I take joy in even the smallest accomplishments.
Well, it's not simply a phone call. It's an international phone call, actually. I'm in Whitby, Ontario, on the shores of Sparkling Lake, Ontario.
Oh, wow. Wow. And now, can you do you have visibility to the water from where you're at right now?
Well, I'd have to walk just a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty sharp. It's pretty clear. We're getting just a little occasional little bit of lag on the voice, but it's not too bad. Yeah. So that's a lot better than the last time when you were roaming around all the different hotels and things like that.
Yeah, I was in a flea bag hotel. Yeah,
that's my favorite kind of hotel. Oh man. Well, clearly there's been a lot of news, a lot of big stories this last week. Some tragedies not related to technology, and certainly wanting to send our prayers and thoughts and compassion out to those individuals. I don't know that there's anything more to say about that, but there's also been a lot of things going on in technology as well. Good and bad. Do you know who Ray Kurzweil is, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah, of course. He was a pioneer of synthesizer technology.
Yeah. And a futurist, well-known futurist, inventor, artificial intelligence guru, all this kind of thing. He now, at the age of 64, has decided that he's going to be part of the Google team.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do with him. He's also been involved with machine intelligence, with neuroscience, virtual reality, just a whole host of things. Now, he said in his blog post that his work at Google is going to focus on new projects, and it's going to involve specifically machine learning and language processing, which is rather coincidental for us here, because I'm going to have on Peter Mahoney from Nuance and Dragon Naturally Speaking fame here in just a little bit, and we're going to talk about some of those same things, natural language processing.
That's more than a coincidence. That's perfect dovetailing of segueness.
Yes, exactly. I couldn't have planned it better. You know, if I had called Ray up and asked him to do something interesting. Also, nicely dovetailing is that in just a couple of weeks, we're going to have on the author of Singularity Rising, which is a book that is just recently released from a professor of artificial intelligence talking about the human-machine singularity, which is going to be occurring supposedly, possibly even within our lifetimes, and what this is going to mean to us in this new world. So that'll be interesting to talk about that as well. We'll see if Ray's been able to accomplish anything by then.
It was very very considerate of Mr. Kurzweil to do all this, to offer background for your interview guest.
Yes, yes. I'll have to I'll have to give him something. You know, maybe, you know, I've got a couple of copies of Dragon Naturally Speaking, and so I'm doing a giveaway. Maybe I should just send them to Ray. Just shoot them right out to Ray. Say thank you so much for giving us the segue. If people don't want me to do that, they need to go into facebook.com/techtalkwrlr, like our page, and then send me an email. If you've already liked the page, don't worry about it. Just send me the email. The email goes to techtalk@wrlr.fm and tell me name, address, and what you plan on using the software for. Or, I don't know, something. It doesn't matter. I'm not going
to
be
Sounds
particular.
Like a phishing scam to me.
Give me name, address, Social Security. I need your bank. Oh, and you can send me your PIN for your ATM in a separate email, so we'll maintain security. And then I'll send you a copy of Dragon Naturally Speaking. Actually, yes. It was really nice of them to give this version of it. It not only includes the software, but it comes with a headset and microphone. So it's the complete cool. package. Complete package.
Yes. We've given out similar things to that at WRLR personal appearances, promotional events,
mm-hmm.
and people just love them. They've responded very positively to that.
Yeah. Oh, I can imagine. No, I haven't used a virtual or a voice recognition program for quite some time, other than voice control, like on my phone, I use quite frequently. So it'll be interesting to hear what the state of the art is today on that. Now in bad tech news, I don't know if you use Gmail a lot, but Gmail's been bouncing up and down. They've been having a lot of problems. In fact, they've had
some outages, I understand.
Yeah. What have you read about that, or have you experienced it yourself? I haven't experienced it myself, but I've heard about it.
I have a Gmail account. I use it not very much. The last I heard was their first, it was an hour long outage, I think. And you thought the world would have come to an end. People were pretty upset about losing their email connectivity for an hour.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There have been more outages? There have been more problems? I would imagine that people have worked themselves up into quite a state about that.
Well, they've had four now since late last week. And coincidentally, all four issues have cropped up soon after Google announced that it was eliminating their free Google Apps edition. It could, you know, I don't think those two are necessarily related, but if they are, it probably has to do with recommissioning or decommissioning some of those servers and, you know, working that routing out around them, that type of a thing. I'm not sure exactly. You know, our good friend Jay Garman, who's going to be on in a couple of minutes, he works for a company, Backupify, which does backups of your social media area and also two of the cloud. So I'm curious. Now, I don't believe that he's actually working directly with them anymore. He's just recently left them. So it'll be interesting to hear, though, if this was something, you know, it's another good marketing ploy by Backupify to say, look, even Google can go down. You need that service. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it is. We get more and more reliant on the cloud and cloud services. So. It's probably a good idea to have a backup strategies in place.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and as you know, I do a lot of private cloud consulting and configuration especially for voice communications and collaboration equipment. And that's one of the things that we run into is people are relying upon the cloud for more of their communications now. And if you're relying on externally hosted cloud solutions, which my company has externally hosted cloud solutions too, but you run a greater risk because you're putting your eggs into someone else's basket and you're really trusting that other company to take care of you. You know, and this happened recently with Hurricane Sandy. People that had invested in their communication systems and put it in the ShoreTel Sky basket were disappointed because they were not able to continue their operations during the hurricane season. And, you know, that's just... It's too bad, but it's something that has to be contemplated. And whether you put those into, you know, the company that I work for is NEC, whether you put them in our company's cloud or somebody else's company's cloud, you got to be thinking, do I care if I can't access it? And if I do, how important is it to me? You know, how long can I handle not being connected, and what am I willing to pay to make sure that I don't have to worry about that?
Yeah, the cloud model introduces more complexities and more insecurity, I think. And it's a good idea to prepare as best you can. And Michael, I know you lived on the cloud long before anybody else did. I mean,
yes, I was on cloud 8. I'm hoping for a promotion and I can get up to that ninth level of cloud. But yeah. No, I you're right though. I actually I wouldn't say before anybody, but I certainly have been invested personally in having my information and documentation up in the cloud and trusted that cloud environment. You know, Carbonite for my backup solution is something that Tech Talk has been a big promoter of for a long time. I love that service.
A long time.
Yeah. Yeah. Way before they were doing more OpenDNS as far as using your DNS services out in the cloud to allow you to apply security solutions for your children at home. And of course, Dropbox is my, you know, probably Dropbox and Evernote are two of my most frequently used applications, and both of those rely upon cloud solutions to supply my information. So,
you were on that train way before most people even knew there was a train.
Yeah, and it served me well. I've had to switch providers a few times. I went off from Microsoft Live and things like this. Dropbox, in my mind, is one of the perfect kind of middle ground solutions for cloud because it allows you to keep synchronized across multiple devices. So you're somewhat device independent, but it also keeps and tracks all that documents that you have up in their cloud on their servers where you can access it from any computer anywhere if you have your login and access. Or if you lose your computers and your documentation, you can just download it right back from there. And it's not a perfect solution yet, but it's pretty darn close from what I've found. It's a real nice middle ground. You know, then we start talking about security issues, but barring that, it's pretty good.
Yeah. Speaking of security, and you just mentioned DNS, there's a July 9th deadline for people that may have the DNS changer on their computer, that Trojan, that Trojan horse.
Oh yeah. No, I thought that deadline came and passed. I thought we had done this, and there's a new one.
Maybe now. It was extended. Yeah. Well, July 9th is what I'm hearing. The FBI is going to deny access. I don't know how they're going to do this. But they're supposed to deny access to anybody with this Trojan virus on their computer.
Well, I think wasn't the deal was that the FBI had discovered this virus and actually took over the servers that the DNS changer pointed to for DNS services, made them into real legitimate DNS servers so that these people could continue operating on the internet. But now what they're doing is they're saying, hey, we're not going to keep paying for the server to stay up just so that you have DNS service. We're shutting it down. You got to figure out something else to do.
Right, right. And I guess you can go to a website to find out if you're infected.
Oh, okay. Do you have that on hand?
I don't.
If you have access to Gmail, you can Google it.
Yeah, you can Google it. Google DNS changer, and there's a website that'll run a check on your computer to see if you got that nasty virus on there. How are we for time?
We're probably right at the end here. I need to bring Jay in and get his. He's down to about 5 minutes now, and then move on.
I don't mind going.
Okay, well, we'll do this again as frequently as Jay, your Jay, will let us. And
it's good to be on the air. It's good to talk to you. It's good to feel the cosmic connection with the Tech Talk listeners and the WRLR listeners. So,
absolutely.
We'll talk again soon.
Wonderful having you, Dave. Thanks so much. And we'll have a great weekend. We'll talk to you soon.
Great talking to you. We'll talk again. And we'll probably talk before the holidays. Bye.
Oh, yes. Take care. Bye. Dave Sanaki. Oh, it's great having him back on, man. I love just hearing his voice even. It's fantastic. I miss him in the Certainly miss him in the studio. And wow, I wasn't kidding when I said we are just down to the wire here time-wise. You know, as usual, I don't think that's anything new for anybody that listens to us. We know this happens. So I'm going to try to get Jay, our good friend Jay Garman. He's got some lottery trivia to talk to us about. Good morning, Mr. Garman. Mr. Garman, how are you doing this fine day?
I'm doing pretty well. How about yourself, sir?
Not too bad. I was actually just had our good friend Dave Sparky Saganaki on the line, and we were talking to him for a few minutes. And in fact, your former company, Backupify, came up in conversation because I don't know if you paid attention, but Google has been going up and down for people here this last couple of days.
Really? I had not noticed that. I guess I'm in one of the special accounts that doesn't go down for other people.
I don't have one of those accounts, I don't think. I'm not sure. If anybody rates it, you do. It's been down four times now. Not Google as you know, in toto, but just Gmail itself has gone down. Coincidentally, or maybe not coincidentally, immediately following their announcement that they were no longer going to offer the free Google Apps edition. So,
funny how that works.
but yeah, so we were talking a little bit about that, and that this may be a good time for people to take another look at services such as Backupify, which I know is one of the best ones out there. It's certainly one of the longer running ones and more reputable. So,
we've been around since 2008 in some form or another, which in internet years is like 10,000 years.
Oh, yeah. So. And I've been a happy user since probably 2009, 2010 or so. And it gives me an extra level of kind of security, like not having to worry too much that if Gmail does kick the bucket or I'm not able to access, that I won't have access to any of my personal and valuable emails and information.
Well, it's nice that guys like you who actually have valuable emails have some method of protecting them. Those of us that just have email, you know, it's mostly just hubris that we use services like this, just sort of the delusion that we have something irreplaceable in our accounts.
Well, you know, when the biographers are looking back at your life and want to reconstruct, what was it that took Jay, known as Jay Garman, known as swashbuckling Jay Garman, from, you know, common man to the entrepreneurial, what was the phrasing in the article? There was a wonderful article written about you in the Louisville Examiner, I think it was?
Insider Louisville. It's a local news blog that's sort of taking on the local Gannett paper, which is not a... The local Gannett paper basically has like four people working for it anymore. They're local.
but they really did a good job, I thought, of identifying yourself as kind of this new vanguard of people that are really kind of creating your own Midwestern Silicon Valley sort of experience and environment, that it is possible to actually take advantage of the changing field of startups that are occurring throughout the area, and to position yourself as, you know, someone who can help that type of a group, organization, company, whatever it may be, get from one stage to another, and that experience is something that you enjoy and love enough that you want to keep doing it, that you're not looking for that pot at the end of the rainbow security. It's like, oh, I made it in a startup and now we're not a startup anymore and things are done. You're actually like, oh, this is not a startup anymore. I got to get out of here.
Yeah, there's a great deal of truth. I mean, don't get me wrong. If I stumbled into the next Google and I could become a multimillionaire, I might stick around. But, you know, that's like winning the lottery. You know, that's not a plan. That's just sort of a be nice if it happens. There's lots and lots of businesses that do very, very well that never get within, you know, three orders of magnitude of that, which is totally fine. There are a lot of us. There's, I think what's different now with people like me that are sort of enjoy that solve the interesting problem and make the business work phase, mm-hmm. is that we can find each other now. and we can all get together and talk about it. It used to be you're just sort of this weird guy that no one knew was like that, or you got strapped in what I call the golden handcuffs of a corporate job where I can't find my next startup and the pay here is really good. I guess I'll stay.
Yeah.
Which to me is not to denigrate corporate jobs. They're an important part of the economy. They're probably the foundation of the economy, but they don't tend to move us forward.
No. Yeah. And unfortunately, I mean, you know, better or worse, I kind of recognize myself clearly in that description. One of the things I did was I got out of a startup and I went to a secure position in a school district. That's how I got involved as a director of IT in school districts. And one of the motivations for me really was that my family was starting, and all of a sudden I had house and mortgage payments and I had children and all of this. And it's like, the idea of being in a secure, you know, those golden handcuffs was appealing to me. I've been very fortunate now that I've been able to move along in my career still, but not by staying in the same role and position. You really, and one of the points you make is that in order to move up, you got to move out in many, many cases.
Absolutely. And I learned this probably 3 years too late when I was with CNET. I kind of got thrown out when CBS bought them to everyone's chagrin. But it's sort of a, I was useful where I was. It was not in the company's interests to move me along. You know, I mean, some companies take the long view in that, and for a while there, certainly CNET did. But it got to a point where I had reached a point of maximal irreplaceability.
Yep.
And so I wasn't going to go any further and stay there. and I think it actually happens no matter what your skill level, you're going to get that in most places unless you're some sort of commodity laborer, which most of us aren't anymore because those jobs have all been taken by robots.
Yep.
There's going to come a point where you can do more, but getting you to do something different is not in the interest of your current employer.
Yeah.
And so you're not helping. And, oh, by the way, the fact that you know how other organizations work make you more valuable at a different organization, because our corporations aren't generally far-thinking about a lot of stuff. Bringing in outside knowledge is something they do recognize as necessary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I have heard recently of some companies that actually are trying to change that model a bit. I've got a number of friends that work with drug companies and in biomedical equipment and things. And one of the things that some of them are doing is like, you know, they have so many divisions that wind up getting spun off that what they'll do is they'll take line workers or workers that are in a set position and give them the option of saying, you know, do you think this is a good idea? And if so, why don't you go and try to make it happen? We'll give you 2 years, and at the end of it, you either come back here or if you still feel it's a good thing, then, you know, stay with the new division and do your new thing. And those kind of opportunities, I'm hoping, become more and more frequent with some of these larger organizations and start expanding, because it just seems like such a cool way to keep individuals like yourself who, you know, want to do new and exciting things but don't necessarily see those opportunities within the organization they're at.
Well, and biomedical, into my limited experience, we have a lot of biomed stuff here in town, is different because, one, it's hyper-competitive, and two, it's also hyper-expensive. So to be sort of a biomedical, especially pharmaceutical development company, you kind of got to be a riverboat gambler anyway, because you're going to spend 15 years and, you know, tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars on a bet that this particular solution is going to work, and it's going to work in a way that's saleable.
And be
so
willing to
say... They get this whole, you know, place bets, take chances sort of thing.
Yep.
And they're unusual in that.
and be willing to say after 10 years that, you know what, this didn't work out. Okay, time to start on the next one. <You know>?
Exactly. Well, $1 billion later... Oops.
Yeah.
Okay. Move along.
Well, speaking of moving along, unfortunately, we'll have to take this conversation up later. Now, I know people can find more information about you at jgarman.net. Can they get the connection to that article about you at jgarman.net? Do you have that link up, or is there another one?
I have not, but that's a good idea. I should do that.
All right, so we'll just...
I will do that after this phone call.
We'll let people know. JGarman.net is where to find that. You need to tell us, though, about lotteries and when the very first lotteries were and why and how it was created.
Well, the earliest lottery in recorded history, and that's a very important thing to say because we're pretty sure they did it before they wrote it down, was in the Han Dynasty around 205 B.C. in China. And it was almost exactly, and those of us that are degenerate gamblers I know them, almost exactly like Keno. It was literally a 80-number, like, lot draw, a lot like TV lotteries are today.
Yeah.
And it was strictly the same mechanism of everyone buys a lot. It was called the drawing of wood with the combination numbers on it, and somebody was going to get the closest to the ones that were actually drawn, and they would win a prize. But the whole reason they did this was to finance public works. And there's some research to suggest that one of the works that was being financed was the Great Wall of China. The Great Wall of China may have been financed in portion by lotteries, by Keno lotteries.
Wow. Well, now, supposedly, theoretically, the whole idea of lotteries here in Illinois was to fund for some of our highways, which used to be freeways, and also too for education. I wonder if people complained in the Han Dynasty when the government continued to have lotteries, but the money did not go to public works.
I don't know that we've gotten that good a history on the Han Dynasty, but it would not surprise me. What's interesting is that lotteries sort of crop up without any sort of cross-pollination of idea independently in all kinds of places. And about the only place that it sort of stayed pure for a long, long time was effectively the Netherlands and the Low Countries. And there was some public works that have to happen there so the country isn't flooded to death. So I think there's a reason that it kept working there.
it's not a bad idea. Well, Jay, so what should we be thinking about for next week? Now, I think that I did get a good answer on that from our good friend Customer Jones, so I just want to point that out. But what should we be thinking about for this next week?
Well, technically, the next time we meet, we may never meet again because it's supposed to be the Mayan apocalypse.
Oh, yes, yes.
On December 21st. So, you know, this may be our last phone call, but I doubt it. Yeah. And not the least because when you say the phrase Mayan apocalypse, there's a glaring error just in that statement about sort of what they're talking about as the end of the world based on this ancient calendar. So what is the first error in the phrase Mayan apocalypse?
excellent. No, that's a good question. This will be good. So if we do have the conversation, we can explain why it was wrong. And if not, then there's
about 800 reasons it's wrong. We could do like 6 consecutive shows on that. But
yeah,
we'll start with just the word Mayan apocalypse.
Just the word Mayan apocalypse. I like it. Well, Jay, I'm going to let you go. I've got to jump into our interview. We're having actually Dragon, naturally speaking, creator Nuance is going to be on here in a minute and talking about a little voice Rocco. So I got to do that. But it was that's a good word for thought, and it was great reading about you. And it's always good talking to you. And we'll be looking forward to talking to you again next week.
All right, take care, buddy. Enjoy the apocalypse that won't happen.
You too. Hey, take care. And, of course, jgarman.net is where we can find out more information about you. Have a great weekend, Jay.
You too, sir.
Thank you, sir. Bye. Jay Garman, jgarman.net. Don't forget to check that out. And man, this is one of these crazy days here where I just have to keep making calls. Let's bring on, we got Peter Mahoney is going to be on with us in just a moment here. Let's see if I can get this phone number written in here quickly enough that we can knock this out. I think I typed it in correctly, and Peter's going to join us. here. Now, as I said, Peter Mahoney is with...
Hi, this is Peter.
Good morning, Peter. Thank you for joining us. I apologize for bringing you in just a minute or two later than I promised. That's not atypical for our show, though.
No problem, Michael. Excited to be here.
Oh, you know, and we're really excited to have you on, too. Peter, I was just starting to describe a little bit about Nuance and Dragon and yourself, but I'm going to let you take the reins on that. Peter, why don't you tell us a little bit about your role, and then let's get into Nuance and Dragon.
Sure. My role at Nuance, I'm the chief marketing officer for Nuance, and for the last few years, I've also been running our Dragon desktop business as the general manager, and been with the company about 8.5 years, and just love everything voice recognition. So it's been a really exciting time for us.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, that's a long period of time in a highly technical field such as voice recognition. I mean, I just got to believe that you've seen a tremendous amount of change and growth in the product in that time.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, in the last 8 years I've been there, our company has grown more than a factor of 10. Mm. So we've seen huge growth, and the business of voice and related technologies like natural language and voice assistants and what we think of as intelligent systems has really exploded. And the capabilities and technology have really come such a long way. Some of it is just because it's so deeply embedded into what we all do every day. Mm-hmm. And there's such great demand for these capabilities that there's a lot of innovation and lots of new stuff happening all the time. So it's hard to get bored.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I one thing I want to make kind of a distinction of here, too, is that when we're talking about the Dragon product, and naturally speaking, that is a, you know, a voice recognition, an individualized voice recognition product, versus like when we typically think of voice recognition in our daily lives, it's really a voice command. Like I use my phone for making phone calls with the voice with my voice in my car all the time. But that, would you classify that as voice recognition, or is that's more like a voice command system, right?
Well, it's a great question, Michael. In fact, the terminology is sort of all over the board, and people think of speech recognition, voice activation, and voice assistance, and there are really a lot of different terms that people use that basically mean the same constellation of capabilities. And, you know, this all started with more simplistic command understanding because it's easier for a voice recognition system to understand sort of a very limited vocabulary. In fact, mm-hmm. the earliest systems only understood about 10 things. They understood digits, you know, 0 mm-hmm. to 9. And as the technology has improved and got more and more capable, we've reached the point where many systems now have not only the capability to understand pretty much anything, and you know, Dragon for your PC or your Mac understands hundreds of thousands of words and can transcribe anything you say, and even more than that, the systems have reached the point where they actually understand what you mean in some cases by using natural language technology. So, but all of it is, you know, they're terminology is a little bit interchangeable these days.
Well, and I guess that's and that's an interesting point too. My background is I actually got involved with some voice recognition projects way back in the day, and this is before things had gotten to the state that they were in now. We had I guess I'll describe it as a disastrous implementation. We wound up creating a voice recognition system for Paulistas in São Paulo to talk and make payments for their remote phone systems. And it worked wonderfully in America when I would speak into it and when my friend would speak into it, who had been born in São Paulo but had lived in America for many years. When we put it in place, actually in Brazil, the number of accents, the different ways that people spoke made it so that even interpreting some of the numbers and things was not accurate. It was not as accurate as we wanted it to be. Now, how have things changed in the last 20 years to kind of overcome some of those issues with different accents, with people speaking rapidly, with words blending together and slurring and things like that. How is it possible to kind of cut through some of that? Is it processor speed, or is there something that's happening behind the scenes that's enabling a higher accuracy rate?
Well, Michael, you bring up a whole bunch of really interesting topics there in your question. And first of all, the capability for these systems to be much, much more flexible. And rather than force people to speak like they've got perfect Midwestern United States English and nice separation between the words and things like that, that's just not the real world.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been a lot of effort from Nuance and many other people and companies over the years to make these systems far more robust. And there are a bunch of things that are related to driving robustness and accuracy in the real world. You brought up a couple. So as an example, accents. Accents are really important to understand because people speak differently. And in a very broad range of not only languages, of course, as you brought up, but your friend from, São Paulo, who also spent time in the U.S., speaks a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that you achieve better accuracy with accents is two ways. One, you have smarter algorithms, so basically the equations, the math that can flexibly try to connect the audio signal and convert it into what is most likely going to be the sound that is associated with that. And most importantly, it's about collecting data and developing a statistical model so that you have lots and lots and lots of information about how different people speak words. And the broader the information you have, the more accurately you can match up those sounds to the mm-hmm. words that are intended. And that's why we spend an awful lot of time collecting audio samples in many, many languages. We support over 70 languages with some of our products, as an example.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way we do that is by gathering huge amounts of data so that we can build these statistical models. But there are lots of other things that go into it. I could spend your whole show talking about that, but I don't want to completely overwhelm you.
No, that's great. And that is about as deep as I want to get technically, maybe, is, to talk about, when we start trying to, in our minds, think about how is a computer going to recognize what I say. I think that we naturally kind of, start thinking about the parts of the words and the way that the sounds are formed and the way those are spoken. And I know you're talking about statistical models, and I assume you're talking probably about some of the the Markov models and things like this, which allow the applications to really take almost like a statistical cloud of a sound and phoneme information and condense it enough that it's able to make some predictive idea about what words should be coming in the sentence.
That's exactly right. And the easiest way to think about it is that words are made up of chunks of sound, of course, and those sounds are called phonemes. When you string them all together, of course, they make words, but the same sounds can make different words.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, homonyms. So two, two, and two, there and there, are of course, things that you have to deal with. But even dealing with similar sounding words, especially short words, as an example, at and it, as an example,
mm-hmm.
If I had to enunciate that because it's even hard to hear on the radio sometimes the difference between those words. And the way that these systems can understand and what we think of as disambiguate, which is a nerdy way of saying make it less ambiguous, is by applying statistics to it. So how likely is it when you say that I threw the ball to him, as an example, if you look at the words in proximity, then it's pretty likely that you'd mean the word T-O, version of two, not T-O-O, unless you happen to have really bad grammar. So that's in a very simplistic way the approach that we use to pick the right words and the right sounds and match them together.
Yep. Excellent, excellent. And yeah, they, like I said, it's probably about as deep technically as we want to get, but that is exactly where I kind of wanted to improve my understanding of how that operates. Now, to take a step back a little bit too, you know, and maybe back even almost to some of my original question, how is the technology applied differently when you have, you know, speaker-dependent recognition versus, you know, more of a, culturally dependent or language dependent recognition. You know, by that I mean when you have an individual using like Dragon installed on your computer versus, you know, using some of Nuance's technologies that would allow you to call into a hospital and go through the, you know, the automatic call response system.
Right. Well, Michael, that's actually a really important distinction to understand. So there are, as you mentioned, speaker-dependent systems. And what that means is that the system effectively develops an understanding of your specific voice. It's not only your voice, the acoustics in your accent, but it's also, they can apply different statistical models to the kind of words that you'd use in different cases. So a system like Dragon for your PC or your Mac learns your voice, and it gets more and more and more accurate until it gets, you know, almost spooky accurate over time, because it really understands the way that you sound and the words that you prefer to use at different times. Then you deal with a system like, as you said, when you call into a hospital or your airline or your bank, and you're dealing with a phone system, you've got a bunch of different problems. First of all, the system doesn't know who's calling. It might be hundreds of thousands or millions of people in some cases, so it can be very diverse sounds coming in. And of course, the audio quality is highly variable. You might be on a cell phone, you might be on a scratchy line, so they have to be much more robust and flexible, and there are lots of techniques we use to do that. One is just being smart about what we might expect. So if you're calling about your bank as an example, then we listen for a very specific set of words that are more relevant to a banking transaction. So that allows you, because you can be context specific that way, that's the task I'm trying to accomplish, that allows you to tune the application to be more robust in that environment. And again, it's about tuning and listening to these things over time to make sure that they're we look at our history and what people do, and therefore we can start to predict what people are likely to say or ask for in those environments, and that makes them more robust and more accurate.
And you know, you mentioned, you know, spooky accurate for speaker dependent. Can we put any numbers to that? Do you have I know at one point it seemed like, especially maybe not for speaker dependent, but for the larger group accuracy, there was a lot of talk about how there was like an 80% wall that we just couldn't get past 80% accuracy for large groups, you know, recognition. But clearly with speaker dependent recognition, we're far beyond that, and I believe we're beyond that 80% wall for the other types of recognition as well.
That's right, Michael, and of course it varies by application a fair amount, but if you're dealing with Dragon on your desktop, I mean, these days you can, it used to cost $10,000 to buy one of these systems that were really focused on the assistive market, where people who just didn't have any choice at all could use these systems. And they were very inaccurate. So they might have been, as you said, 75% accurate, which was a little bit frustrating, of course, to the user. These days, it's very inexpensive software and very flexible, and you can achieve, most people achieve when they first install and use it without any training, somewhere north of 90% accuracy, and then it very quickly gets up to the high 90s and typically gets about 99% accuracy for people who do who use the product a little bit. So that kind of speaker dependent, as we said, where you train it to your voice and it starts to learn you, gets really, really accurate. And then the other systems, like the phone systems, most of them are far higher than 90% these days, because we can restrict the domain and make them really smart to expect the kinds of words that people may be asking for. So there are lots of techniques to do that. And then there are other kinds of applications where it's okay not to be 100% accurate or even close. So we have systems that will do things like transcribe voicemails for people.
Mm.
And in that case, you're dealing with highly variable. You don't know who's calling in and leaving your voicemail, but these systems will convert a recorded voicemail message, convert it into text, and send it to you as an email.
Yep.
And if that's 85% accurate, you get the gist of what was said, it's really, really useful.
Yep.
And it's in that case, because it's such a highly variable signal you're dealing with, you have to be a little bit flexible around what the accuracy will be. But it really depends on the application. But these others, of course, are very, very highly accurate.
Yeah, and I guess that's the that's one of the keys, is setting the expectation of the user appropriately, as well as the expectations for the system level. Certainly with the voicemail, that's something I've talked about frequently on the show here, is I just absolutely and 100% rely upon my voicemail to email transcription process that I use through Google Voice. And then I also, to my day gig, is I work with NEC Corporation, and we also have systems that do the same thing there. And you're right, it's not, you're not going to take that transcription and immediately send it as an email. It's not accurate enough to do that. But knowing that 95% of all voicemails that you receive are essentially saying, "Hey, it's me, call me back, here's my number," that's about all you need. I have to ask now too, so we're getting really close to a high level. This is a question that came from a listener, basically, is we're getting close to a really high level of accuracy. Be honest, when you first joined Nuance, when you first started working with voice recognition, how much of that decision for you and how much of your direction was driven by your love of science fiction and HAL 9000 and wanting Scotty to be able to pick up the mouse and say, "Computer, computer, work for me"?
I tell you, Michael, it's very interesting. Many of us who work at Nuance have a history of love of that kind of technology, love of science fiction, and we really want to make it a reality. In fact, our CEO often says that the best marketing plan we ever wrote was actually written by Gene Roddenberry and Stanley Kubrick and the people who wrote these science fiction things, because they created this great vision that we're trying to make a reality. So it very much is on our minds. We think that most people these days have a real vision for what the way that people and technology should relate. And it's our job to make that vision as close to reality as possible. And that's really what we work on, is doing that, because we really are motivated by that a great deal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think it's more in people's mind as a near reality today than it ever has been, because of the success of such functionality as Siri on the Apple and Google Now with the Android phones and so on. Do you see from your end more of an interest and more of an excitement about voice reco than you have in the last 8 to 10 years?
We absolutely do, and Nuance has been really fortunate to be part of many, many extremely public kinds of applications out there in the last few years, and it's really started to get to the point where most of us, of course, experience these kinds of capabilities on a daily basis, whether we're talking to our smartphone or giving directions to our car or calling our bank or increasingly these days even talking to our TV and all the smart TV technology that's coming out. So as these technologies become readily available consumer options, then more of us will start to get used to them, demand them, expect them, and that's great news for all of us. We're really excited about the promise of this capability and what it really is delivering today.
Yeah. Yeah, and I got to believe that's changing your target market too, especially for the desktop recognition. You know, we talked about briefly just about people that had a special need for the software at one point, you know, didn't have any options for input. But now people that do have options that are perfectly capable of typing are starting to adopt voice recognition. What types of people do you see picking up voice recognition software, using it? What environments do you see people using it in where it's a really a viable alternative to entering information by hand or by keyboard?
Well, Michael, Dragon is used really by many different kinds of people and many different kinds of environments today. I will say that we really appreciate the input, the participation, the work that our earliest customers who have been using our product because they have an assistive need. We really owe a lot to them because they put up with the products when they didn't work as well and continue to give us great feedback. So they're a shrinking percentage of our population. It's quite small now, but they're really important to us. That being said, there's an extremely broad set of users who use Dragon because they want to be more productive. They have a lot of writing to do. It's just fun for them in some cases, and everything from busy professionals who have to write a lot of correspondence. We have a lot of people who write reports, like inspectors and social workers and teachers and professors. We have a lot of people who are in professional environments, like lawyers, of course. Doctors are heavy users of Dragon technology. And some of my favorite users, though, are the younger users. We have a lot of students who use Dragon, and especially kids when they start to get to middle school and they have to write a lot more. A lot of boys especially have difficulty writing because some of their what's called executive functioning in their brain, their ability to multitask, develops a little bit slower. So it's hard for boys to actually write even with a keyboard or with a pen and paper.
Mm-hmm.
And in using their voice really allows them to write and contribute pretty significantly. And that goes the same for people who might have a problem writing. They have dyslexia, they have bad spelling, and lots of different uses. We also have older users, like a lot of older users who like to write down their story of their history of their family, and they haven't gotten themselves comfortable with a computer and typing, and Dragon is a great way to sort of get those stories down. So a very broad set of the population.
Excellent. No, that makes a lot of sense. And I know too, you know, and unfortunately I've got to bring us to a close here. I know we've only scratched on really the surface of what Nuance has in its product categories. And, you know, certainly Dragon is the flagship product that people see. We all love the pirate commercials and and the like. So it's on our minds, especially now here as the holiday seasons are coming around. I know we can think of people. Where can we go to find out more about Nuance, to find out more about Dragon and Naturally Speaking and the different products that you do have, business and personal?
Well, thanks for asking, Michael. And for overall Nuance, the best place to go is nuance.com. For Dragon specifically, you could just go to dragon.com, and it will bring you to information that's specific to Dragon desktop.
Beautiful. Well, Peter Mahoney, thank you so much for coming on air with us, talking so intelligently and so intensively and passionately about Dragon and about Nuance. I know for me, it's definitely taught me a tremendous amount that I didn't know about the state of the product and the state of the market today. And hopefully we've rung a few bells for listeners out there that they'll be looking more into it as well.
Well, great. Thanks for having me, Michael. It was a lot of fun.
I appreciate it. And have yourself a great weekend and a great holiday. And I'm sure we'll be speaking again soon. Thanks so much, Peter.
Thanks. All right. Bye.
Take care. Peter Mahoney from Nuance and Dragon, naturally speaking. Wow, what a fantastic guest. If you missed any portion of that, you're going to want to go back. Remember, we've got this all in podcast format, facebook.com/techtalkwrlr. Also, too, that is the place to go, facebook.com/techtalkwrlr, to go like the page, then send me an email, techtalk@wrlr.fm, and let me know that you want a copy of Dragon. They were kind enough, Nuance sent me some copies of Dragon to send out to listeners. So a great giveaway. I can't promise pre-Christmas delivery. However, I'll try. And if we miss it, we'll do a what did Santa forget kind of thing and send it right after the holidays. Oh my gosh, it is time to rock and roll out of here. Here's what we're going to do. I'm going to bring us out with a little song. You know, we listened to last week a great new artist, and I got comments back on this artist, that this was just the craziest thing. Fitz Pleasure by Alt-J was what we played last week. I'm going to play you another song by the same artist. This is Alt-J, and I'm going to play you Breeze Blocks. And again, same thing with the Fitz Pleasure. You got to go out. You got to go find the videos for these two. They're just a lot of fun. Fitz Pleasure is probably one of the creepiest music videos that I have seen in ages. This is not going to get you in the Christmas spirit, but it's wonderful music. Great stuff. Listen to this, Breeze Blocks with Alt-J. Shouts out to everyone that was a part of the show today. Dave Sparky Saganaki calling into us from Canada. Jay Garmin Swashbuckling out of Louisville, Kentucky, and of course our good guest and friend Peter Mahoney from Nuance Technology calling in from the East Coast. What a great show. Thanks everyone, and have a great weekend, have a great week. We'll be back at you next Saturday, and this is Breeze Blocks by Alt-J.
She may contain the urge to run away, but hold her down with soggy clothes and breeze blocks. Cedrazine, your fever scream me again. Never kisses, or do you ever send a full stop? Do you know where the waffins go? They go along to take your honey. Rain down how we build our breakfast down and say, my love, my love, love, love. Sleep, my love, my love, my love. She bruises calls, she's blooded pistol shows. Hold her down with soggy clothes and breeze blows. She's morphine, queen of my vaccine. My love, my love, love, love. Soggy clothes and breeze blocks. Germaline, disinfect the scene. My love, my love, love, love. Please don't go. I love you so, my love.